unsurpassed, penetrating and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it. We can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself.
This is the Buddha, this is the Dharma, this is the Sangha. I can only speculate as to why it's come up for me to do a series of talks on the Diamond Sutra, of which this will be the third or fourth one. But I'll throw out one idea. I think it's a good possibility. At a time when many people are experiencing at least occasional karmic storms in which elements of confusion and doubt are often quite prominent in the mix. This wonderful teaching is just what it claims to be. This is actually the diamond cutter, the truth that will cut even the hardest material, cut through even the hardest delusion. And it is quite literally what it claims to be. Now that being said, I just have to say again that it's a pity that people translate this in a way that sounds so philosophical and abstract. Because what it's talking about is not philosophy, and it's not something abstract. The problem is that it's something that is actually so close to us that we overlook it. There's no greater scripture anywhere in the world, in any religion, for trumpeting forth the simple truth that there is an unborn and undying true refuge within our own heart. And that nothing else in the universe has the reality that this has. And nothing else in our experience can be the refuge that this is. But as I was telling someone this afternoon, sometimes when I read the translation, my heart sinks. How am I ever going to explain this? Anyway, some of the little chapters are easier than others. The very essence of this sutra is put forth as well in chapter 23 as in any other. Just a few words in this little chapter, but it says it all. So the Buddha says, furthermore, Subhuti, this, and the word this is italicized by the translator to set it apart from the rest of the text in this paragraph. This is altogether everywhere. So let's say a few words about the this here. What is meant here is the term that is probably being translated as this is probably tathāta, often translated as suchness. Some of you have heard me talk about this before. I've often said, as River Master said, the eternal is. When my intuitive sense of the eternal first manifests in my experience, when I'm most aware of it in its first arising, as it were, in consciousness, it always has one of two aspects. First of all, it will be either the sheer isness of it. It is. Or it will be the love of it. The isness of it is experienced with a deep sense of comfort and security. The love of it with a deep love. The isness of it, that it is, the sheer unescapable unborn and undying reality of it is what is expressed by the word tathāta. How they ever got suchness, I can only speculate about that. I think it's just a way to try to express the inexpressible. The word tathāgata, which is often used to as a name for the Buddha, or a title of the Buddha, or a way of describing the Buddha, means he who comes forth from suchness. Or you could say more in better language, you know, he who is fully in harmony with his true nature. So if you see and italicize this with a capital T, as in this case, you just think this is the eternal they're talking about. Our own true nature. The cosmic Buddha. The Buddha nature. Our own true heart, with a capital H. The true reality of all things. So, let's just put the eternal in, plug the eternal in for this. Furthermore, Subhuti, the eternal is altogether everywhere, without differentiation or degree. Therefore, it is called consummation of incomparable enlightenment. When River Master went to the Far East, to the gate of Sojiji, the Doan asked her, "What have you come for?" She said, "The perfection of Zen." That is the eternal. I came here for the eternal, to know and to live with, to take refuge all my life in the eternal. That was what she was saying. And that is the magnificence of training and teaching that she has bequeathed to us. It is straightly attained by freedom from separate personal selfhood and by cultivating all kinds of goodness. Think of straightforwardly. Meditation is living with a straightforward heart and mind. A heart and mind focused on the important thing, on the true reality. That's true meditation. True meditation is not originated by us. It is a natural activity of Buddha nature. When we get out of the way by letting go of what we're hanging on to in external things, by ceasing to look for it in that which is passing and turning within, there it is. It is straightforwardly realized by training in freedom from separate personal selfhood. This is a very awkward way of putting something. The essential point here is that there actually is no separate self. That the root ignorance that is the ultimate cause of suffering is very simply the conviction that there is something separate from the great immaculacy of the eternal. And then setting up that separate self, as it were, in competition with, trying to put it in the driver's seat, so to speak. And off you go down the old karmic road. The wheel of birth and death. And however far one goes down that karmic road, that conviction that there is something separate from the eternal is an illusion. Whether we think of something as something as being special by virtue of being especially precious more than any other aspect or facet of the eternal, or whether we think of it as being special because it's especially evil and unworthy of the love of the eternal. In either case, we've set up the illusion of a separate self. Whether that separate self, the illusion of self, be an illusion of a holy self or an old unholy self. In either case, it's an illusion. If you're in a car that's headed down a steep hill towards a cliff, and you got no brakes, your brakes go out. It doesn't matter whether you're in an old beat-up car or in a new Rolls Royce. The essential thing is you're going off the cliff. Whether it's a bad self or a good self, it's all an illusion. And it all leads to suffering in the end. When we truly take refuge in the true self, when we begin to experience something of its vastness, its inexpressible goodness beyond good and evil, It's infinite love and compassion. It's infinite wisdom. When we are in awe of it, when we bow to it with a heart of respect and utmost gratitude, then there is no illusion to let go of. And there is nothing to be reborn. It is straightforwardly realized by freedom from separate personal selfhood and by cultivating all kinds of goodness. Many places in this little scripture you will find talking about kinds of goodness. And even while it says it is valuable to do these kinds of actions, at the same time, it says, and these are unrealities. Do not try to be good in order to make a good self, or in order to make a bad self a good self. That's futile. Do that which is good to do for the sake of doing that which is good to do, because that is the direction that one's heart draws one in. That is the direction that we are led. If it is good, Rev. Master wrote in her commentary on the precepts, is beyond good and evil. If it is right, is beyond right and wrong. To do that which is good to do without attachment to its goodness and without attachment to the results of the doing is to be free from the enslavement of greed, hate, and delusion. The Buddha then says, Subhuti, though we speak of goodness, the Tathagata declares that there is no goodness. This is merely a name. So let's re-render this. Subhuti, though it is good to do some things and to not do other things, even the things that are good to do are, in comparison with the reality of the eternal, unrealities and should not be turned into an illusory refuge. In doing that which is good to do, continually take refuge in your own true nature and do not be thrown off course by the appearance of goodness. And by worldly views about virtue and vice, right and wrong. Whenever in the scripture it says this is only a name, the way to read that is this is fundamentally an unreality. The eternal is the only reality, the only true reality. course, this is what we recite every morning. This teaching is what is recited every morning when we recite the scripture of great wisdom. In the immaculacy of the eternal, the six senses and their objects are unrealities. Virtue and vice are unrealities. Enlightenment and delusion are unrealities. All of these things relative to the eternal are unrealities. They are impermanent. They are fleeting. They are, as it were, the reflections that appear and disappear on the face, the undisturbed face of the great mirror of the Buddha nature. Hold fast to the great mirror of the Buddha nature and do not become fascinated with, horrified by, enticed by, possessed by the reflections that come and go in the mirror. Nothing matters. Mindfulness is all. What is mindfulness? Moment-to-moment meditation. What is moment-to-moment meditation? Moment-to-moment letting go of externals and holding fast to the eternal. Staying right here in the present. Being content with what is right here in the present. Homage to all the Buddhas in all worlds. Homage to all the Bodhisattvas in all worlds. Homage to the scripture of great wisdom.